The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
This week on the Legion Clubhouse, time to see how the other half live.
Tales of the Legion of Superheroes number 316. Meanwhile, published October 1984, written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Terry Shoemaker. Synopsis: after the war with the Legion of Supervillains, the Legion begins to rebuild.
So we are, Matthew, jumping into the other Legion of Superheroes book, the one that was not on the good paper and not with the good colors and not with the good storytelling, right? That's what this one is?
No. The paper was fine. The colors were different. Deluxe printing on Mando paper actually looked kind of terrible, but
this is the way.
This is the newsstand Legion book. This is Tales of the Legion, which you could buy in your S&S drugs and your Kreskis and your Stop and Shops and your Pump and Goes, and you know.
So this
whereas
is,
the other book was only visible through like the direct market.
Yeah. So that's interesting because this is going on at the same time as the series we just completed, the first 5-issue arc of the other book, or the 6 issues, whatever it was. What I find super interesting in this is at no point in the grocery store version, this book, does it say, hey, you want to know why everybody's off on mission? Go read blah, blah, blah.
I think it was probably 3 episodes ago now, Legion 315 did have that little blurb about next month Legion of Superheroes number 1 comes out.
Right.
You know, it's only available through your store. But yeah, it was honestly a call. We could have done these in the middle of those, but here's the thing.
I'm fine with that. But what I'm saying is, if I'm little Matthew Peterson going down to a Jimmy's drugstore to get me a cool Frosty and a comic book, and you pick up the Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, you're probably going to read it and go, oh, where's all my favorite Legion members at? What's going on? And because, you know, your dime stores and your grocery stores and your mom and pop stores and all the other kinds of stores that carry comic books probably don't carry a large selection of comic books, nor do they carry a lot of those selections of comic books. Poor little Matthew Peterson could have not gotten issue 315 where they said, hey, go pick up this other book. And so what I'm getting at is one of the things to get people to take action on stuff is to say, hey, here's what you're missing out on. Right. Even in comic books in the 1980s, FOMO is something that you need to play up on. And that's something that they're just not doing in this comic. I really expected, hey, to find out what the other, I mean, they mentioned that the other members are off on a mission, but just a little editor's box that says, see the Legion of Superheroes, you know, issue 1 on sale at your wherever, your direct market or your comic book store or whatever. It's just missed opportunity.
Well, and I think there you do have to take into account that this is 1984. These books would have been on the shelves in the summer of 84. And I feel like at that point, you know, there was no such thing as a trade paperback yet, really. Books weren't being collected. The back issue market was all like a secondary market, and it was all collectors. There wasn't really a whole lot of, let's make these stories for a secondary market. Let's make these stories so we can collect them down the line. And I'm wondering if it's just the expectation still that Silver Age, even Golden Age expectation that these are basically disposable entertainments for the young people.
Yeah, I mean, but even then, still, hey, man, here's your chance to go buy another one of these great comic books that you're loving. I'm just seeing just missed opportunities. Also, we talked last episode about Laurel Kent and her lack of clothing underneath that tunic. It is very clear on the cover that she's not wearing anything under that tunic. So on the one hand,
what you are seeing at your mistaking is a shadow across her breast is actually the top of her little Borat swing thong bikini thing.
Uh-huh. So no, she naked
she wears her
there.
Teeny tiny sex, little black
sex sells. No, sex sells. I understand. I don't blame them, but yeah. Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen at home, canonically, Laurel is wearing a little bikini under her cape.
Sure. And you know what people should look up? Have you ever seen this, Matthew? Have you ever seen what is it? It's like Mormon porn. It's where you take pictures of women like in bikinis and you put like black dots strategically over their bodies where their bikinis are. And you look at it and you think that you're looking at a naked person just because your mind is filling in those holes.
I want to look at naked people. I'm
no, that's what but I'm, but that's why, that's why I'm saying it's Mormon porn, because my understanding is a lot of the Mormons look at this because it's not technically wrong, but it still fulfills the same purpose. Yeah, no, seriously.
More power to them.
Anyway, we do find out what the Legion of Substitute Heroes is up to and why Cosmic Boy is, you know, on planet. You know, they're doing their thing while everyone else is doing their thing.
He is still mad. Cosmic Boy is still trying to find the jerks that brought the fireball nuke to Earth and killed his mother and injured his brother and father.
His brother does come out okay, though, as we find out at the end of this issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his brother actually comes out really well, you know, somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
Not that we've gotten there yet, but...
Yeah. I was going to say, Dr. Gaim is certainly got very... No. What's a Gaim? Oh, a Gaim.
A Gaim is a mispronunciation of Goyim, which is a word for a person who is not of the Jewish faith.
No, I think you need to watch a couple more Simpsons episodes. You'll get there eventually.
I think it's Dr. Jimmel.
So, oh, no. Look on page five. Look on page five. They call out the Legion annual, but they don't call out the other book. This is just like so weird.
The thing that's tough about this is that Legion Annual page, and we mentioned this before when we talked about the Legion Annual, it cannot appear in the proper sequence. It cannot, because this issue features a sequence with Wildfire.
Yeah.
Wildfire is present at the Battle of Orando two episodes ago.
Right.
In LSA, which makes me think three, number three.
Which makes me think that at the end of this adventure, when they're done, he's just going to pop back into space, which then you pick right up on the next Legion of Superheroes book where they're all in the same location together.
Yeah, I don't think that happens.
I mean, they do that a lot.
Yes,
they do that a lot.
Go buy the annual. The annual is still on sale.
No,
ladies and gentlemen.
No, what I'm saying is a couple of things. Number one, if they're advertising the annual, why aren't they advertising the other book?
Because you can get the annual where you bought this book.
I think they're missing out on opportunities. And then as far as Wildfire popping out, I'm referring to the other book where he's hanging out with everybody else. I think he's going to pop out for a millisecond, just like Secret Wars. And he's going to pop back in a millisecond later and he's got a black costume. And no one understands why it's there or why they can't sleep or why people are suddenly getting killed in the middle of the night. But, you know, comic books. So this is really a good, I guess, Legion of Substitute Heroes book, I guess, a little bit.
It really is, because in this opening sequence, you know, we get the first six pages of the book, basically, dedicated, or the first four pages, at least, dedicated to the subs and Cosmic Boy being an actual useful fighting force. I mean, they really do well. There's a point where Night Girl punches a guy and the guy's like, oh, and he flies across the room and Stone Boy
turns to stone
so that the guy hits him and he's unconscious. I mean, they're teaming, they're using their powers together. Polar Boy is all over the place. It's almost like all these guys really ever needed was a leadership force. Rock, somebody who could come in and teach them how to be heroes. Rock.
Bouncing Boy. I thought that's what Bouncing Boy's job was.
Well, Bouncing Boy is at the Academy.
Oh, that's right. He's at the Academy.
Bouncing Boy is not Cosmic Boy. I love Bouncing Boy, don't get me wrong, but he's no Cosmic Boy. And Cosmic Boy, I think, could have whipped the Legion of Substitute Heroes into a force equal of either the Wanderers or the Heroes of Lalor in like an afternoon.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, they all get blasted off onto a ship into space, a booby trap ship, which, you know, how were they to know that the Legion was going to inspect that ship at that time and have it go into space, which does bring up the question.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't trapped in the ship, right? The whole thing is they don't have their flight rings, which allow them to fly in space. Or they don't have flight rings because they're the Legion of Substitute Heroes.
The subs don't have their
flight rings. But the belts, do they have their belts? Remember when they were allowed to exit, they were allowed to keep their belt?
None of them seem to be wearing the flight belts. And the flight belts, unlike the flight rings, are very visible.
Yeah, but do the flight belts give them atmospheric protections? You know, space protections?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
The transuits, the atmospheric transuits are built into the flight rings.
Yeah.
But those were a retcon well after the flight belts went away. So I'm going to say no.
At the very least, Cosmic Boy should be able to go, hey, I'm going to go get help really quick. See you guys in a little bit. And then come back.
Is he wearing a ring?
I don't know. Why isn't he wearing a ring? Isn't he part of the Legion of Substitute Heroes?
I don't think he's actively in the Legion right now. I think he is on a leave after the death of his family, but I don't know. I never see him wear a ring, but I mean, the thing about the flight rings that they had to put in years ago was, oh yeah, they have a cloaking mode.
Yeah, yeah. They're invisible unless they're needed.
Sometimes we forget to drive to draw them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know. It's just a very convenient problem they've gotten into just to show off how cool the Legion of Substitute Heroes are.
Right. Well,
and really, when it boils down to it, they're only saved because the brothers' magnetism are able to pick up one another, and that's really it.
Right. The brothers Kryn operate on the same magnetic level. And I will say this, as much as I appreciate the Legionnaires, you know, the subs doing well, part of the reason they're in trouble is the ship starts to take off and Nightgirl goes, hey, I wonder if there's a spare wheel behind the wall. I'm just going to tear the wall open.
Yeah.
So Nightgirl literally punches a hole in the ship, causes a massive explosion.
Which there's a lot of light
herself
in,
out.
Isn't there a lot of light in that ship? How is she supposed to be using her powers?
She's not directly in sunlight.
Oh, okay.
I mean, It says sunlight. It specifically says sunlight on the label. I don't know.
All right. All right.
You tell me.
Meanwhile, the invisible kids are going to go on a magical adventure, which pops them out of our dimension and takes Wildfire with it. Because apparently Lyle is still super depressed. And so the only way to get anyone out of their funk is to take them back to the place where they were trapped for centuries.
Take them on vacation. I will say that I do love one thing about this. You've been asking for several months now, why haven't Lyle's friends come to visit him?
Yeah.
And we do see Bouncing Boy going, it just doesn't make any sense that Lyle could be alive. But he doesn't show any interest in going to see him. He's just like, it was a simpler time when we joined the Legion. I'm glad I retired. Yeah, are we out of nachos? But
yeah, oh man, it's like really, really cruel, right? It's like, we don't care enough to actually go and talk to the guy. Sure, he was a teammate, but he's dead.
Who were Lyle's closest friends in those early days?
Whoever he was spying on at the moment.
Well, you look at it. He hung out with Saturn Girl. Saturn Girl's off getting married or being pregnant.
No, having a mom, being a mom, yeah.
Yeah.
Only baby. Only one baby. Remember the dark cloud came and there was only one baby.
She delivered two babies. Somebody just, stole her delivery off the porch like they did with my DoorDash last weekend. But Bouncing Boy maybe was there. Matter Eater Lad, you know, Light Lass isn't on the team right now because the last issue of Legion of Superheroes hasn't happened yet. We're still in the past. I mean, on the one hand, yes, it is very suspect that nobody came to talk to Lyle, but then it's also one of those he died 35 years ago things.
I know, right? It's just very weird. It's like, eh, he died. Eh, and maybe we'll get around to talking to him one of these days.
Think of it as like Facebook. Let's say you and I are on Facebook and we hear that somebody we went to, Leroy, is having an existential depression.
Well, why is was he dead and then came back to life? Because, man, I'd want to go talk to him.
Let's say Leroy was dead and came back to life.
I would definitely be in a mood to go and talk to him, as would many, many people.
We're superheroes, so we've seen this before.
I mean, how many times? Once?
Four times.
Who has come back to life?
In the
Lightning Lad? Lightning Lad.
Lightning Lad came back to life when they were 14 years old, and they all just like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Mon-El was dead for an issue, and then Eltrogand resurrected him from the dead. Let's see. There was that whole thing where Ultra Boy was dead for several months, and it turns out he was actually floating in another dimension possessed by Superboy wearing the costume of
Reflecto. Yeah, but that's not technically dead, right? So that's,
well, they didn't know he wasn't dead.
Right, so that's the thing here.
They built him
Seemed very excited when he came back. In fact, everybody that's the funny thing, right?
Two more of her.
Oh, yeah. So, but I mean, it's funny that, no, we're talking about dead and come back, but it's funny that all the others, you know, have died and have come back, and everyone's like, yay, everyone's back. And then poor Lyle, it's like, I don't know. I've got like a PTA meeting. Well, that's what I think, right? That's why he was always invisible. They knew he was spying on them. They didn't trust him.
So, maybe Lyle was just a creep.
I bet he was. That's my guess. That's my guess. Anyway, we're going to find out what happens to Lyle in about 10 seconds.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, number 317. Death Trip. Published November 1984. Written by Keith Giffen and Paul Levitz, with art by Terry Shoemaker. Synopsis: what is the secret of the invisible kid?
So we jump into issue 317. And we find out that Lyle is not invisible kid. He is, in fact, a giant Cthulhu monster.
He's the dream demon.
And because...
Now, I would like to go on the record right now. I would like to state that when this book came out, July 31st, 1984, I do not believe for a split second that Paul Levitz and Keith Giffen knew what they were going to do when they brought Lyle back 19 issues earlier.
Oh, no, that's why he's just been sitting in his room.
Yeah, they realized they couldn't do anything with the story that they had built, and so they put this together to wrap it up.
I mean, it seems like something that should have been done a while ago. Seriously, it should have been like two or three issues after, but I can understand you're hitting up to a big anniversary issue. You got the big annual, you got the launching of this new comic, you got to get some stories in place to pay off later. But this is definitely one that could have been part of, you know, the next issue after Lyle returned, or maybe two issues after he returned. Right. And I like the fact that Invisible Kid 2 and Wildfire are somehow quantumly entangled with all of this nonsense. So that when the two invisible kids jump into the dream dimension, Wildfire is yanked in with them. And then they basically are just like, hey, it's a giant wish machine. Remember when you had a giant wish machine and how you used it to save your lives? Let's do that exact same thing.
I feel like, because I've been thinking about this in retrospect, it's interesting that when Lyle and Jacques teleport, Wildfire is brought with him. And I don't know if it's so much a quantum entanglement thing as whatever is up with Jacques' new power, which was never part of Lyle's power set as far as we knew,
right,
is really weird. And this is one of those rare cases in comics, because we always see people getting a new power or modifying existing power. You know, Ant-Man was like, hey, I wonder if I can turn this around backwards and get bigger or
become giant.
Iron Man is just like, okay, what if I get,
what if I stop drinking
extra iron? Right. But you have this situation where Jacques is now faced with a new superpower and he's totally out of his element and he doesn't like it and he doesn't try to master it. And eventually down the line, literally asks Brainiac to suppress it. And I feel like on the one hand, it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, what Otter calls the power creep in comics, where you start out and you have the ability to telekinetically control up to 3 houseflies at a time. And 16 issues later, you know, you're an invisible Nazi who's embodying your own skeleton and controlling giant robot bees. I mean,
I feel
everybody
bad.
Has that.
I feel bad for him. If only there was another black man that he could turn to, another black man who has the power of opening up holes to other dimensions. If only there was somebody he could go to and have a conversation about his power creep. Yeah, too bad. Too bad that doesn't happen in this comic.
Bummer.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I don't think anybody ever thought about that.
No, I guarantee you they didn't. And if you are Levitz and Giffen, where you're literally writing 2 comics a month
at the same time,
you don't really, and who knows what else they're working on at this time. Isn't Paul Levitz an editor at this point or no?
I don't know if he's quite to like the executive editor status that he would eventually have, but I want to say
he's probably a group editor.
I don't know that he is. I don't even know if he's the editor of Legion, because Karen Berger, who is going to take over as editor in chief when Giordano steps down in like 87 or 88, I think, is editing Legion. But yeah, I think Paul at this point is mostly just writing.
Okay. Well, even then, that's still a lot to write. That's still a lot to write in, you know, 2 a month to do that. So there's probably not a whole lot of time thinking about it. And as we see in this issue, they're building up to something big. So they're, I'm sure at some group meeting, everyone was told, hey, you need to start wrapping up your stories because this is coming down the pipe. And what am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about page 11.
The Monitor. Yeah. And this is, if you count chronologically, and this is not something that I knew I had to go and count, this is the 14th cameo appearance of the Monitor in DC Comics. They started in April of 82, and they will continue right up until the debut of Crisis on Infinite Earths. This book came out in July of 84, had a street date of November 84. Crisis number 1 has a street date of June 85.
Yeah. So you're less than a year.
We're about 5 or 6. Yeah, we're 5 or 6 months away from the big events. So the Monitor is everywhere in DC Comics. And of course, he always brings his girlfriend, the Harbinger.
Lila.
Or as we know her at this point, Lila and her cleavage.
Oh, sorry. That's wrong.
You having fun?
You're thinking
that's Layla.
Yeah, I know. I was really surprised when Lila and the Monitor showed up, because I was like, wow. And so that goes back to what I was saying a moment ago, is they've had a group meeting that they know this big event is coming. They have seen, you know, past the veil, and they know what's coming down for all of them. And so my guess is a lot of this is, if you've got any dangling plot lines, you need to wrap them up. And Levitz and Giffen are like, crap, what are we going to do with Invisible Kid? We need to wrap that up very quickly.
I don't know if that's a crisis thing quite yet, because when they come out of the crisis,
well, what they've only got 9 issues before Crisis hits.
Maybe, but you've also got to think about this. Legion of Superheroes doesn't actually respond to the crisis until well into the situation.
Yeah.
So this book doesn't actually have anything to do with Crisis probably for the first 6 or 7 issues, even though that book does feature Legionnaires prominently. Dawnstar is pulled into the team in the very first issue. But when they start catching up and start messing with this thing, it's only then that it becomes 100% clear how borked Legion of Superheroes continuity is about to be.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm getting at. Even if they had 9 months, 12 months, whatever it is, they knew it was coming. So they're going to have to pack as much stuff into these issues as they can, which is also got to be a huge headache because, hey, we're going to launch 2 Legion books a month. Great. We're going to launch 2 Legion books. And then literally this would be the same month that the first issue of the new book came out of the other book. You're being told, oh, yeah, you need to start planning threads for when Crisis comes. And it's like crap on a stick. That has got to be the biggest pain in the neck to have to deal with, knowing that you just launched and you're going to have to figure something out whenever this all new, all different DC Comics arrives.
See, we'll have to go into that when we get there, but I don't feel like the Crisis was meant to be all new, all different at that point in time. But I can definitely see the point, and I do feel like, especially this, you know, Invisible Kid plotline, and it's done, kind of does absolutely feel like we need to clear the decks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to get some of these things off of our plates.
So. Yeah. And then, of course, we've got Dev M. Ugh. Is he a Daxamite yet? Is he a Daxamite yet?
No, not until after the Crisis.
Oh, okay.
Dev M is still the knave from Krypton.
He's still a jerk.
He is a knave.
He's a jerk.
Yeah, he's a jackwagon. He's a sexist. He's a perv. He's just like, hey, Siobhan Aaron, how are you? You know, he kisses her. He's all like, you should come work with me, if you know what I mean. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I'm going to mix purple and orange. Oh yeah,
it's really creepy, you know, too, because then you find out it's like, oh, is he trying to recruit her for a secret science police or some secret organization inside? And again, the Crisis is coming. Now's not a good time to start a whole in-depth story
arc. He's going to induct her into his personal team, if you know what I mean. Dev M gets wrapped up in a couple of issues, but yeah, the Dev M thing is leading up to something that we've seen a couple of times, and I know I've complained about at least once. So
on tier, yeah,
I'm not mentioning about him any too. Names on tier, on tier, on
yeah.
tier.
Yeah, yeah, and so that's basically the issue. They leave Lyle back in the dream dimension. They defeat the Dream Master. They both come back to where they need to be, and
the dreaming.
Yeah, and everything is wrapped up nicely. And then Invisible Kid 2 is like, I don't feel so bad about taking that dude's name because he was a horrible Cthulhu monster. And that's the lesson we're supposed to learn. He was a horrible Cthulhu monster. So I don't feel bad about taking his name. Also, he is drawn
never a horrible Cthulhu monster.
In the last page, the very last page where he's burning Lyle's inscription into the Shabama Lama Ding Dong place. Shanghala. He looks, if you look, especially in that very first close up of his face where Wildfire is obscuring him, he looks just like what Jeff Moy would draw in about 10 years. In fact, those last three have a lot of what Moy would future probably reference for this character.
Yeah. You know, I've talked about the Lytle stuff that I love, but it's really easy to forget the Shoemaker Kiesel team, because both of these issues, 316 and 317, very attractive issues, very pretty.
Yeah.
Jacques is very pretty. I mean, even Dev M, you're just like, yeah.
Oh yeah. No, everybody's, guy. I mean, Siobhan Aaron is probably the best, you know, if we're looking at levels of attractiveness, and of course, attractiveness are all, you know, subjective, sure, but so. When we're looking at, you know, the attractiveness of Siobhan Aaron, probably the most attractive she's looked in a long time, but they all have that, I don't want to say rounded face, but you know what I'm talking about with the Moy kind of design.
There's a youthfulness.
Yeah.
There's like,
yeah, it's almost
faces and like bigger, longer eyes. Necks.
Yeah. Bigger eyes do that a lot too.
In animals, they call it atavism. Like a puppy, you know, looks like a cute little wolf. But yeah, they do look at Jacques in those last couple of pages, you know, looks very, very young when he's looking out at us and spiking the metaphorical camera. First, there is something I must do. He is just a very pretty, he looks like 16, 17 year old man.
And
That's rare for him. And, you know, when in the dream realm, when he pulls off Wildfire's helmet and we get handsome Drake Burroughs again, I'm like, yeah, Drake Burroughs.
Yeah, on page
he's
eight.
He's a pretty kid.
On page eight, you can see that exact same thing, too, where you see that youthful, I guess, the almost anime-esque influence that we would say today. There's an anime-esque influence in this. It's just very, it's very shocking to see that.
Maybe like kind of a cartoon influence at this point, because you did have that, like a Dungeons and Dragons cartoon thing. But Shoemaker draws really attractive, really smooth kind of characters, and I really appreciate Shoemaker's work.
So. I this is the kind of design that I like, where you do have that kind of smoothishness that makes it look a little bit cartoony, but still realistic proportions and all of those kinds of things. I can even, you know, I don't even mind the bigger eye stuff. That's fine by me. But then we jump over into the backup story. We already covered the previous backup story when we talked about the history of the White Witch in one of the previous episodes, dear listener. So we get into Tuska, and it's just like, okay, now we're back to the scratchy line work and hard edges on everything. And it's a very big contrast between the two artists.
Once a Hero, published November 1984, written by Paul Levitz on plot and Mindy Newell on dialogue. Art by George Tuska. Synopsis: how can Duplicate Boy get his confidence back?
In 1984, Tuska would have been nearly 70 years old.
Yeah.
Still working. So
is he doing newspaper work at this point, or where is he at? Because a lot of his stuff looks like stuff we would see in a serialized newspaper, like the Spider-Man series, or one of those other, Tom Mix or whatever. Not Tom Mix, Mark Trail.
What year is it in your head? I feel like at this point, George is, I don't know if he's exclusive to DC, but the only place I remember seeing him in the 80s was at DC, because I know he did some stuff with, he did some Superboy, he did backups here, he did I guess he did the World Greatest Superhero strip, but it would have been over by 82.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting. So the whole point here is that now that Duplicate Boy has screwed up with Shrinking Violet, the rest of the team, the rest of the heroes of Lalor are like, what can we do to get him to give his confidence back? I know. How about we throw a woman in front of a moving car and he'll have to go and save her and they'll fall in love.
How about we nearly kill an innocent?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that is, and people are thinking I'm being, hyperbolic like I usually am. But no, that's literally what they do here. It's like, hey, let's make this car run over this girl and see if he goes and saves her. Maybe he's got his powers back. Maybe he doesn't. If he didn't have his powers back or didn't have the confidence to use his powers, that girl is street pizza. Veronica Lodge is street pizza.
Well, I mean, if so me, Life Lass is there, you have to figure that Gas Girl and Volvo Lad are also there. So if something happened and that girl was about to be Veronica Lodge smashed, I feel like the other three heroes of Lalor could probably have stepped in.
Also, here's the worst. Here's the worst thing about this. Where's it at? Let's see if it's on the next page. Listen, I couldn't let anything happen to a good-looking girl like you. Come on, I'll walk you home, beautiful slap. Man, listen, if you were an ugly chick, I would have let you die, seriously.
No. He doesn't even imply that.
No, but the opposite of that is that. You know, if you hadn't been a good-looking girl, it's like, oh, so if I was ugly, you would have let me die? And then what's the deal with the car winking at the end of this?
Well, you remember Life Lass. So again, Life Lass has the ability to bring things to life. That's why the driver, when his car runs out of control, says, oh my gosh, it seems like the car has come to life.
Oh.
Life Lass literally animated his car.
Okay.
And the car winking is the car still being alive under the control of Life Lass's power.
Kill me. To bring things I am to not life. Supposed to be alive. Kill me.
Steven.
I was not meant to feel pain.
I am an abomination. No, you cannot say kill in a comic book in 1984. You can barely say Duplicate Boy has,
problems. Oh, man. This is like Mindy Newell is the dialogue writer on this.
Mm-hmm. And Mindy is a brand new creator in 84. She's like 19 years old.
Yeah. And I'm really surprised that that's the language that we get out of Duplicate Boy. I mean, the plot, the story, you know, it's fine. You know, it's, you know, have him go do something, meet his powers, and he meets a girl that he likes. But man, is it steeped in misogynistic 1980s machismo.
Yeah, there's definitely sex. You also do have to realize that in the beginning of the story, like page 3, Evolvo Lad turns into a super genius swollen brain and creates this plan.
Yeah.
So Evolvo's genius brain is what came up with, hey, why don't we kill an innocent?
Yeah.
So you do have to ask yourself, what kind of world is Lalor and what kind of heroes does it have?
It's definitely one steeped in the 80s.
I guess.
Here's the thing. I like these stories. They're fine. Reading these out of order is a little odd, but it makes perfect sense. You know, if you're reading it this way, I would have liked reading this in the release order, not, you know, for this show, but at the time I would have loved bouncing back and forth between the two issues because it's almost like you're flipping the dial between two different shows while the commercials are on. And this was really kind of sets up what we get to see with the Legion of Superheroes and Legion series in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Like 94, 95 is when that really kicks in.
Yeah. 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 And I really dug that. I mean, at the time you can literally read the other book like we've already done and just enjoy that. You can read this and enjoy that, although all your favorite heroes are not in these books. But you can still just enjoy it for what it is, and it's perfectly fine. I still kind of wish they would have done some cross promotion and publicity. The problem, and we'll see this happen in the reboot, where it becomes necessary to read both books.
Yes.
But this one does feel
read them in Yellow Diamond order.
Yes. Yes.
And even then they barely make sense.
No, they make sense. But you know, when they first started that, they didn't have that logo on the front. And so you could just say, oh, I want to read this or I want to read that. And then when they merge, you're like, oh, okay, now it makes sense what they're doing that. But, this is kind of a good combo, especially if you are a Legion fan. During this time, it's like, oh my gosh, I've got two Legion books. And maybe if I continue to read Superman, the Legion will show up there. It seems like a win-win for a lot of people. So while I don't think that these stories are super deep or super involved, it is nice, like bubblegum reading, right? It's stuff that, as you mentioned at the top of the show, stuff to be thrown away later, but it's still enjoyable for the 5 seconds that the gum flavoring lasts. in your baseball bubblegum card collection.
But during those 5 seconds,
your gum is being all your gums and cheeks are being torn up by that cheap gum. Did you like these two? Do you like this reading order?
Yeah, I love the Legion, and these are, you know, a point where I was reading comics regularly and picking up Legion as regularly as possible. So, you know, I bought the original issues. But more importantly, it really does remind you that sometimes your brain plays tricks on you, because I remember these as Steve Lytle books. I remember that because they came out at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Dev M and you look at all these things, I remember that cool, you know, Steve Lytle art on everything. I remember everybody being super handsome. It just turns out that it was actually Terry Shoemaker and not Steve Lytle. But if you look at those, you know, issues here in a couple, when you start switching back and forth, you have a Shoemaker, you have a Lytle, you have a Shoemaker, you have a Lytle. There's like an 8-issue run where the Legion is just beautiful twice a month. And it's amazing. It hasn't been like that since, you know, Keith Giffen did his thing with that guy.
Not going to say it. All right, that wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that in the minds of Lyle and Wildfire, the most powerful Legionnaires are Superboy, Mon-El, Colossal Boy, Ultra Boy, and the White Witch, which is both puzzling, but also really kind of cool.
Yeah, I think we also learned that the secret to getting found anywhere is magnetism.
And most importantly, we learned that being a knave from Krypton means that you're actually a jackwagon no matter where you are.
Thank you again so much for checking us out this month. Don't forget to check out our Discord server. We'd love for some of you big hardcore Legion fans to come and join us over at our Discord server. There's a link in the show notes. You can join for free, and we'd love to see you. So until next time, I'm Podcast Man.
And I'm Dig M, the Sugar Smacks from Venus.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.